It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy Iannocco will join us along with Ken, Mac OS Ken, that is, and Clayton Morris from Fox and Friends. $1 billion for Instagram. Did Facebook get their money's worth? We'll talk about that. The end of innocence for Mac owners with the new flashback virus now hitting 600,000 Mac users. And a whole lot more. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly. Stay here.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 294, recorded April 10th, 2012. The End of Innocence. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by GoToMeeting with HD Faces. Meet easily with clients and colleagues, even when traveling or working remotely, for your free 30-day trial. Visit GoToMeeting.com and use the offer code MacBreak. And by Ford, featuring voice-activated Sync App Link. Now you can control select smartphone apps with your voice, helping keep your hands on the wheel and your eyes on the road. Learn more about the technologies Ford is bringing to its vehicles at Ford.com/technology. And by Hover.com. Hover is domain name registration and management. That's simple. Upgrade to a premium domain and trade in your old clunkers at MacBreak.hover.com. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show that covers your Apple needs in great in-depth detail. Joining me, I can never remember, from Upper New York State, I'll say that, Mac OS Ken, Ken Ray. Hey, OS Ken.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
It's beautiful. Wait a minute. It says San Francisco on the postcard behind you.
Yeah, no, I used to live there.
Oh. That's wishful thinking.
Well, I decorate for other places, right? I mean, I'm not going to move to Buffalo and decorate for Buffalo. You'd move to Buffalo and decorate, you know.
Would you send me a welcome to Buffalo postcard? I'll put it up here.
If I can find one, sure.
Now go home. Thanks for joining us. Great to have you also with us from Fox and Friends and our old friend, and he does a bunch of podcasts on his own as well, Clayton Morris. Hey, Clayton.
Great to see you, Leo.
You're also in New York.
Yeah, I'm in New York, and I've also decorated with Philadelphia over my shoulder.
So look at that. Places. You went to opening day, didn't you?
Yeah, I was at opening day yesterday. It was brutally windy and cold.
I saw pictures of you and Natalie and the baby. What's his name?
Yeah, Miles.
Miles, and you got another one on the way. So it was a cold family.
It was, but we enjoyed a little early baseball. So always good to get out there.
Clayton also does the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe. And I just like saying that.
It's a pop culture catch-all.
And Daddy on Board with Mike Quackenbush. Yeah. So, guys, aren't you sorry you didn't come up with a photo-sharing application with a bunch of filters about a year and a half ago?
Oh, this is unbelievable.
I don't know if I have schadenfreude or what, but it's the opposite. What's the opposite of schadenfreude? Schadenfreude is the guilty pleasure in the failure of others. What is it when you have insane jealousy over the success of others? Just jealousy.
I'm sure it's one of the deadly sins.
It's called humanity.
Envy. $1 billion. Say that with a pinky. Instagram is sold to Facebook. Lots of arguments over it. By the way, Instagram CEO, if you've been wondering, Kevin Systrom, his payday, $400 million. $400 million. They were, it's interesting because, you know, they're only about, 15, 16 months old. They were recently, their most recent valuation for investors was $100 million. That was, I think, last fall. So just $1 billion. There's 13 full-time employees. So here's how it's going to break down, just in case you do not feel jealous enough. Kevin Systrom, $400 million. Co-founder Mike Krieger, $100 million. The venture capital firm which led their Series A funding round last year, $180 million. Andreessen Horowitz and Baseline Ventures, $100 million apiece. The rest of the 13 full-time employees will share a pool of $100 million. You'll get a stake depending on how long you've been there. Huge win. Now, what does Instagram bring? a user base of 30 million iOS users, and they just went out on Android last week, which apparently prompted over a million new signups in the first 12 hours. So figure 50 million. Are they worth it, Ken? What do you think?
How could you possibly say? I don't know. I mean, what's been really interesting to me over the past 24 hours is watching how much people hate the idea. And I'm one at the same
time.
Well,
Instagram users, you mean? I mean, I see a ton of people on Instagram saying, that's it, goodbye.
I read Zuckerberg's post earlier on Facebook, and he had something like 153,000 likes. But, you know, that's in his backyard. A lot of people, I know at least three Instagram users who say that they've already deleted their account. Either that they have or that they're going to. Personally, wow. I don't care about that part of it because we've either made peace with what Facebook is doing or we haven't. As far as, you know, gathering information and gathering users, I'm more concerned that they're just going to screw up the UI because, you know, like they do with Facebook every 6 months. We're going to change this now because this is going to be better. And, you know, not necessarily, but they go ahead and do it. And like, I still haven't converted to the timeline. I haven't even checked my Facebook page in like 2 weeks. So I don't know if it's done it by itself or if it's going to do it next time I log on or what. Well, I love the simplicity of Instagram.
Go ahead, Clayton.
Well, I was going to say, Ken, I mean, it seems like not much, or at least are we led to believe that not much is going to change, according to Facebook. I mean, that was the concern, right? That suddenly now it's going to be built into Facebook somehow, and it's going to lose the quaintness of it.
Right. Well,
in most of previous Facebook's previous acquisitions, they've been what we call acqui-hires. I think of, for instance, Dropio. Where they bought Drop.io and closed it immediately.
Right.
And they really were buying it for the founder.
I sort of went a little more macro on this, which is this what we can begin to expect with a lot of our social networks that are outside the Facebook, Twitter universe? For instance, Path, you know, I'm a big Path user, as you know, and love it. And is that good? Is that long for this world? What about Spotify? Can we expect to see that gobbled up soon, built in more integration? So, you know, you fall in love with these social networks and they bring real value in a way that's meaningful. I'm able to share. It forces you to take more creative photos, perhaps, and it's all about photo sharing. And you can, you know, you share them right out to Facebook right within the Instagram app. And it's already a clean experience. When you go over to Facebook, then you click on it, you see it already there. You don't even have to click on a link. It propagates the image right inside the timeline. So it was already doing that. I don't know that much is going to change. But to Ken's point, I don't want it to lose the UI. I don't want to lose what we love about it. And that's, of course, the fear. I mean, look what, you know, Microsoft buying Skype.
There's also a larger, which, by the way, they haven't changed a bit, right? Skype's the same old Skype.
Right.
I think there's a bigger issue, though. You raised Path. I'll talk about Instagram. There are a lot of these very cute personal sites where we, as the users, pour our content, our heart, our souls into. You know, I think of CDDB. Remember CDDB, which the CD database, where it was kind of like a Wikipedia for music, for lyrics and information about albums, and everybody contributed. And then it got bought by Gracenote and commercialized. And it was as if we'd been working for the man without any compensation for years, and boom. And I think that there is a little bit of that as well with Instagram, where, we were participating in this great small – it was just two guys for a long time, right? Just this small little thing. It's so cool, and we're pouring our heart into it. And then the big guy comes along and says, I'll take that. And in the process, takes us and everything we put. Same thing with Path. Your life, I know, because I follow you on Path, Clayton. Your life is in Path. It's like your family photo album. Me too. I love it. But if it suddenly gets acquired by somebody, suddenly everything doesn't. Do you see what I'm saying? It feels like some sort of invasion.
Ken, like you know, listening to certain music, I'll see something Ken posts in Path, like a certain album or something he's listening to, and I may want to go and purchase that or listen to that. And all of that data, in fact, is even more personal.
Right.
I think I would argue that's even more personal than Facebook, because we're just sharing with people who are close to us, who we have an acquaintance with, who we want to see what's going on. So that information seems to me maybe even more valuable than what we put up on Facebook.
Ken?
Well, at the same time, though, going back to what Clayton was asking at the very beginning, you do have to – I mean, this – did anybody expect that Facebook was going to buy Instagram for $1 billion?
No.
But how has Instagram been making money? I mean, at some point they have to worry about monetization. And certainly it was, you know, it took less time than we thought it was going to, maybe, or than a lot of people who were even thinking about it, you know, thought it was going to or would have thought it was going to. But at some point they have to make money. Same thing is going to happen to Path. You asked a question about Spotify. Spotify has a revenue model. I mean, they've got advertising and they've got paid subscribers. I'm one. But will that be enough money? Sure, somebody else could come in and buy them at some point. But yeah, Path is just sitting there waiting to be bought, right? I mean, especially after the whole after the whole Instagram thing.
Path was started by Dave Morin, who took quite a bit of money out of Facebook. And I doubt very much Path will be sold to Facebook, because I think the reason Dave left Facebook is so that he wouldn't have to go back to Facebook. But you never know, right? And some people, I saw actually O'Malik was writing about Instagram, and he said some people said they sold too soon. Wait a minute. If somebody offers me $1 billion for anything,
yeah,
I think I'd take it, right? That's just a large number.
Holding out for 1.5.
Yeah,
really?
I mean, what are you holding out for? If Kevin Systrom gets $400 million, that's more money than he could spend in a lifetime. Right. Just the interest is more money than he could spend in a lifetime. What are you holding out for?
Well, and my question too is, why can't you? I'm curious. You know, you certainly build it. You have the bringing this. Maybe that's the answer. I just answered it myself. I don't even need to go on. Which is the user base, right? You're getting all of these people, these individuals.
That's what it is.
Why
right?
can't Facebook? You know, so many photos shared from the Facebook application on the iPhone and Android. Why not build a similar photo sharing mechanism with filters and unique things with inside the Facebook app? Why go out and purchase this? It's because of the user base. And one of the ways you don't annoy and piss off the user base is to change everything, because then you lose the user base.
What Mark Zuckerberg says. We believe that these are different experiences that complement each other. In order to do this well, we need to be mindful about keeping and building on Instagram's strengths and features rather than just trying to integrate everything into Facebook. That's why we're committed to building and growing Instagram independently. So he's reassuring people. Now, they've never done that before. I have to say, Facebook has never done that before.
Right.
But this could be the first time. And when they've never spent $1 billion for anything before. And I think Mark even kind of implied that this is a one-time only deal. He says this is an important milestone for Facebook. $1 billion. Because it's the first time we've ever acquired a product and company with so many users. We don't plan on doing many more of these, if any, at all.
So this Spotify.
And why didn't Apple go after Instagram? Would Apple have benefited from this? They have $1 billion to throw away. They make that every month, you know, extra.
Why would Apple go after it, though? They've already got people's payment information and their user experience.
So they have nothing to gain.
I mean, most
of... But wait a minute. Instagram has nothing of mine. Instagram has my pictures, my email address, and my Facebook login. It doesn't have a credit card. How valuable are those 30 million people? Are they worth Are they worth $30 plus each?
And your location.
A lot of location information, huh? Mm. But you could have bought Foursquare for less than $1 billion.
Right. I'm reminded of what Steve Jobs said to the Dropbox folks, right? What was his specific comment to them? That you're a utility?
Right. Your infrastructure.
And I'm thinking to myself, really, it's a photo app. $1 billion?
Right.
For a photos app? Really, why couldn't Facebook have done something similar here? But again, it comes back to the user base. And I just try to think about other services out there that are like this, sort of built on one thing, that are ripe for being taken over. So don't fall too much in love with, you know, the likes of Pinterest, Path, these other things, because, you know, as soon as we fall in love with them and we hit sort of critical mass, they get gobbled up.
Steve Jobs says Dropbox is a feature, not a product. Feature. He spent the next half hour waxing on over tea about his return to Apple, why not to trust investors, blah, 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 and then offered $800 million for Dropbox, which they turned down. So that's a pretty good feature, you know? I just got to tell you, he may have dismissed them, but that's Steve right there. That's Steve. You guys are crap, but how much?
Exactly.
Right, you know? Right. I'll pay for your crap.
that's Steve Jobs in a nutshell. That's just a feature. That's not writing. It's typing.
You're not just even a worth 800 million. I'll give it to you, but you're not even worth 800
you're
million.
You're not
I
worth
shouldn't
it.
Give you 200 million.
I shouldn't
but
give
I
you anything. It's just negotiation, isn't it? Andy just tweeted that he's standing by for Mac Break. So you want to try him again?
I will try him.
That's
right
an interesting
now.
Tweet, given that we've not able to reach him. Andy Naka was scheduled. He's at the World affairs counsel in Colorado right now. And I haven't.
Yeah, he just texted. 2 seconds, I'm here.
2 seconds.
Andy Nocco, are you there? I have apparently connected with him on Skype. But
it's a magic, the magic of Skype. Yeah, he may, because he's at a remote location, somewhere deep within a mountain, the Strategic Air Command.
Let's see.
He may not.
And
clonk, clonk. Here he comes.
Andy.
Hello.
Hey, Andrew.
Look at that. Sorry about that, everybody.
No, not at all. We're glad to have you here. We've actually just begun. I'm going to let you. I'll tell you what. Let's take a break while you get Andy all squared away.
And then
I'm going to ask you, Andy, what you think. We've been talking about the Instagram purchase. That's really the topic of the hour. But first, a word about GoToMeeting from our good friends at Citrix. When we have a meeting, and we do it a lot. It's often with, well, I'll give you an example. Our web team, the people designing the Tech Guy website, they don't even have an office. GoToMeeting is like they have people in Rhode Island, in Colorado, all over the world, this Lullabot company. But this is the beauty of it nowadays. You don't need to be in the same location. You just use GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting is screen sharing. I know you're familiar with that. But it's also HD Faces. This is their newest feature that lets you see the team. And I got to tell you, there's something very important about seeing people, their facial expressions, whether, you know, if you're talking to a client, his arms are folded or she's smiling, those things make a big difference. And of course, if you're pitching a client, having them make a connection to you by seeing you is very important. HD Faces is amazing. Great quality video. Most computers now have cameras. And you know what? It also works now with the iPad. You can join a GoToMeeting with an iPad with the camera built in, the audio built in. You could be sitting in the park having a meeting. Oh, it's so cool. I want you to try it free for 30 days. You visit GoToMeeting.com. You see that orange try it free button. You click that. The offer code for this is MacBreak. And just, you know, 30-day trial, $49 value. All of the information here, iPad, Mac, PC, iPhone, Android, 15 attendees per meeting. They have free product training, 24/7 support. All you have to do is put MacBreak in here. And you will be meeting, seeing. It's incredible. And because the screen sharing is built in, it's really nice. You know, whoever holds the meeting can start the screen sharing. But, you know, anybody in the meeting can say, let me show you, and take the screen over. It is fantastic. Always secure, 128-bit SSL. Uses NAT traversal, so you don't have to punch a hole in the firewall. You don't have to have IT get IT involved. So there's really, it's much more secure for that reason. I just think not the IT part, not having to punch a hole in the firewall. I want you to try it free. GoToMeeting. That's what we use. GoToMeeting. Offer code MacBreak. I think we got Andy all set up now. We brought his avatar in. Where are you? Are you at the World Affairs Council?
The Conference on World Affairs at the University of Colorado in Boulder.
That's such a great event. And every time you do this, I say, oh, we've really got to go next year. And it happened. It comes up so quickly.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, Kiki Stanford is here, so
that's neat.
There is a TWIT contingency here.
Good. Kiki's great, yeah.
Yeah.
So what happens at this is the 64th annual conference on mm-hmm. world affairs. What happens there?
It's like 100 different panels open to the public. They bring like 100 different speakers from all kinds of professional disciplines, all the way from Apollo astronauts to former UN directors to people like me. To talk about all kinds of topics, for politics, culture, technology, science.
Gosh, that's great.
So yesterday I was on talking about Twitter and Facebook in my first panel of the week. This morning I was encouraging 80 journalism students to cheer up. It's not quite so bad. You can make money in journalism today.
Really?
And tomorrow.
Just start a photo sharing app and you're golden.
Find a guy who can write code.
Right.
Hung onto him like glue. Get coffee and donuts for him if he asks you to, because sometime he might be worth $1 billion. But it's cool. This afternoon I'm on a panel about interstellar space travel, and then tomorrow I have the stage all by myself for 4 to 5 minutes to talk about Steve Jobs and Apple.
Oh, cool.
So, which means I've got about 24 hours to think of something to say on either of those subjects.
I think you could probably do it in right now. I don't think that's so hard for you.
We'll do it as a pre-record. That's brilliant.
Yeah. And now, ladies and gentlemen.
Just hide the Isaacson book behind the podium and read from it.
And then Steve told me, I mean him. So, Andy, we've been talking about Instagram, and, you know, I started off by saying, gosh, I'm jealous. $400 million to Kevin Systrom, who created it. A lot of anger among the Instagram community. I wouldn't say the majority by any means, but I'd say, you know, some you know, 5-10% of the people posting things like Andre Nantel, who's been here and is a friend, saying, I've been on a Microsoft and Facebook diet for years, and I'm not starting now. Bye-bye Instagram.
Yeah, and it's not just a problem for people who'd never wanted a photo service that wasn't part of a Facebook. Now I'm starting to feel a bit of fear if you're somebody who has ever been in a photo that's been shared Instagram, because obviously everything that gets posted to Facebook gets automatically face tagged. And so now I got to sort of worry if I was okay with a friend of mine taking a picture of me in my Lady Gaga costume 2 years ago because, hey, it's just Instagram. Oh, dear. We've got a new problem on our hands.
Wow. I didn't even think of that. And you use Instagram pretty thoroughly. Yes, you're a regular on that.
Not much. I do have an account. I use it from time to time. I do like the service. It's just that I got into a situation of like just social media glut,
right,
where trying to figure out what do I use Path for, what I use Twitter for, what I use my blog for. But I do like it a lot, and I just wasn't terribly active on it. So it was, the cost to me was not terribly great.
Clayton and I are big Path users, and I think we love it. And I think now our fear is are we going to face the same thing with Path.
Yeah. See, that's the difficulty. When you go through the terms of service, there's a lot of legalese in there, and much of it does say that anything that you do becomes our property here. And the thing that gets a lot of attention is, oh, gosh, if I post a photo on Path, if I post a photo on Instagram, does it become the intellectual property of Instagram? And, of course, they're going to say, no, it isn't, because that's not true. But what's really valuable is is just that social map that you build after a number of months or years on a service. If I'm using after 5 years of using Twitter, inside their computers is a really great map of the people that I like, the people that I respect, the people I want to hear from, every article that I was interested in enough to follow a link from Twitter. And if some company decided to buy Twitter and then just shut down the service, they would have a wealth of information about a great many users. And of course, because you click that OK button, you kind of waived your right to not be exploited. We trust Twitter, and that's fine. We trust Apple, and that's fine. But would we trust the company that might buy Twitter, the company that might buy Instapaper? So that's where it really is coming to prove that there is no such thing as opting out of social media now, because at some point, somebody will collect some piece of data from you that a some point will be sold to somebody else, and then the cat's out of the bag.
It's like Google Plus. And I, speaking of the terms of service, I just got a notification from Path because I took a photo of my son earlier today that now Path owns my son.
All right. Get some of those paternity checks coming in.
Right.
Actually, there would be a big difference with Path, because Path has the promise of privacy. You only share with the people that you connect with on Path, whereas Instagram was like Twitter, always public, right? If anybody could follow you on Instagram. So there's no expectation of privacy on Instagram.
Well, unless you can lock up your account on Instagram.
Oh, that's true too.
So that nobody can follow you. But, you know, if you're doing that, happens to that?
I presume it would stay locked.
Ownership?
I would imagine
it will, as long as Facebook keeps it the way it is. And don't misunderstand, I'm not saying Facebook is going to do anything bad with it. I mean, the only or questionable. I'm honestly, like I said before, I've kind of made peace with the fact that Facebook is gathering all sorts of information. I just don't want them to screw up the thing that I like. I mean, they've already done. You mentioned earlier, do you get off of a social network once they change it? I don't go to Facebook anymore because it's gotten to be too much of a pain.
Right.
I mean, it's every 6 months it's something different. I don't want that to be the same way with Instagram, because it's probably that I use most often on my phone. That and it's probably the most often used app on my phone. That and Osfora, the Twitter client that I use.
Right.
And Ken, you just mentioned something earlier about changing the UI, and then Andy brought up a great point about tagging. I mean, that's not something you can currently do within the app, and you're worried about changing the UI. I wonder if an update is forthcoming, because while they say they're not going to do anything to it, I can't imagine that would be a feature they wouldn't want brought into Instagram, which is the ability to tag friends in photos. That seems to me one thing that they may say, that's one thing we're going to change. That's one thing we need to add to this. Otherwise, it really doesn't fit with the way in which we share photos on Facebook.
And let's not forget that Facebook, they're the kings of upgrading the security and privacy features that they offer to their users and then quietly changing a default setting that you'd already put in. So my worry is that what if 6 months from now there was some sort of a default setting that said that your Instagram pictures belong to an Instagram cloud and they're separate from Facebook. Maybe there's going to be an update, which we won't know until 2 days later, that, oh, by the way, you didn't know it, but your 200 Instagram photos just got added to what other Facebook users can see. We gave you the option of opting out by allowing you to click on this button and then that tab and then scrolling down to the bottom and then clicking this other button. You chose not to do that, and so we decided that you were okay with that.
Right.
There is, and thanks to the chat room for pointing this out, there is an Instagram delete page in the Instagram Support Center. In order to delete your Instagram account, visit instagram.com/account/remove/request. When you delete your account, your photos, comments, likes, and friendships, everything will be removed permanently and will not be recoverable. So you do have an opportunity, at least now, if you're really paranoid about it, to get rid of it. This is what Kevin Rose posted on Instagram. He's right now he's on a trip in Japan with his new fiance, and but nevertheless took some time. Now remember that Kevin just sold his company to Google, and there were rumors that Google was hotly bidding war for Milk, Kevin's company, with Facebook. So Facebook's been kind of looking for this kind of – now, Milk didn't have anywhere near the size of the community, but it had some good developers. Kevin wrote, huge congratulations to Team Instagram on joining Facebook. Kevin Systrom and team have built a product that brings out the photographer in all of us. I'm excited to see what they can dream up next with Facebook behind them. On the other hand, I've seen a lot of people say, hey, really, what is it? It's just a bunch of kind of crappy filters. Yeah. I mean, really?
But it's a social network built around the idea of, in some ways, making us better photographers, making us more aware.
Look better. I don't know if you're a better photographer, but you look better in Facebook, right, because of the filters.
I know looking at other people's photos, you see angles on different photos that you might not have thought about. You see different ways in which to capture an individual, whether it's a portrait or whether it's landscape, something like that. So in many ways, that's why people are so attracted to Instagram, because it's that one area where they can go and they can see other people's photos. They can comment on it. They can learn something themselves. And even if there's no filters at all being used on it, it's just cropping it so that it's, you know.
We had Penny De La Rosa was on a Twit Photo, professional photographer, who said she uses Instagram for inspiration. I mean, this woman is a very accomplished professional photographer. She says, oh, no, Instagram is huge for me. I get inspiration from it. She's a food photographer, posts a lot of great pictures. A lot of pros use Instagram, actually. So, you know, kudos. I'm not really that jealous. I'm very happy for we interviewed them when Instagram first came out. Sarah Lane told me about Instagram right when it first started. I think we were – Sarah and I and our group here at Twit were probably among the first users of Instagram.
Yeah, you got in trouble. Do you remember?
Yeah, my first post had some profanity in it, which I deeply regret. And Mark Zuckerberg, please, if you don't mind, I'd like to delete that.
Now Mark owns that.
Yeah, he owns it now. Nothing I can do about it. I think, you know, the only thing I take away from it is, wow, this is an overheated. I think we are now a bubble for the app economy, right? There's no question about that.
Well, it's also, I'm sure you guys were commenting about this earlier, that part of it must have been just to keep Instagram from falling into someone else's hands. And when you have that much money in the bank and you can simply write a check and take a gun off the street, you just take the gun off the street.
And that somebody else has to be Google, right?
Could be Google. I'm not sure if a company like Yahoo could have found anywhere near the amount of money to Instagram away. But no.
Maybe if Yahoo wins their lawsuit against Facebook.
This would have sounded like a much less silly statement had we not interrupted the middle of it.
I'm sorry. Say it again. But, wait a minute. Okay, go ahead. I'll pretend I didn't laugh. I'm sorry. My initial reaction was, it's good I wasn't drinking coffee. That's all.
I was pretty much going to say that a feature like Instagram could have saved a company like Yahoo had they been able to raise the money, but they can't raise the money, right. So they're out. But it would also have been a really big gem for Google to get. As soon as I heard the news yesterday afternoon, the first thing I thought was, yeah, this is like Google when Google bought YouTube, that by one stroke they solved a problem that they had, being a product that they were trying to make, you know, with Google Video but hadn't really found any traction with, and knowing that whoever acquires YouTube is going to have a really big stick to beat Google over the head with. May as well just write the check, take the gun off the street, and make that part of your portfolio.
But you're right. If Flickr could have acquired this, could have been huge.
Right.
I mean, you can share from Instagram to Flickr.
Yeah. And Flickr is, of course, part of Yahoo.
Yahoo. But you're right. This would have been huge.
But it really does show the idea of a company kind of circling the drain a little bit on certain features. The fact that Yahoo acquired Flickr, which still is my favorite photo sharing site, and didn't turn it into the Instagram of mobile, just shows that start putting in bids on the office furniture because this is just like that mildly offensive thing where a certain empires used to do, saying I want your resources, so I'm declaring you a society in chaos and capable self government. I'm going to appoint a colonial governor for Flickr, and we're going to start running you properly from now on.
I mean, it was a no-brainer. Flickr could have done it because there's nothing really that hard to do. By the way, thank you to Pat Dimi in our chat room. It's Penny De Los Santos is the photographer who used Instagram, still does use Instagram for lots and well worth following on Instagram. She's just a great photographer and was on TwitPhoto and said Instagram was a huge inspiration for her.
It's not even like, I mean, we shouldn't be too offensive about Yahoo and Flickr, because even Facebook was trying to figure out how to make mobile photo apps really, really work and failing. The other thing that was occurring to me yesterday was that this is, if you can imagine a car manufacturer that doesn't have a truck division, trying to understand why people buy pickup trucks and the sort of person who wants that, even if they don't own a farm. At some point you say, what if we just bought this company who's been successfully designing trucks for 3 years and just boom, done.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Can I ask a question?
Sure, Ken.
What does Facebook actually get out of this? I mean, if they're going to leave Instagram the way that it is, are they using it as sort of a test kitchen? I mean, are they coming up with features in Instagram, or using the features in Instagram and moving them over to Facebook? Because I mean, we talked about this before, or I mentioned it before. There's still no monetization involved in Instagram, so it's not like they're making more money. They get 30 million users, but they've got so many millions more users than that already.
And you got to figure that 90% of the 30 million are already Facebook users.
One would think.
In fact, most of my pictures on Facebook come from Path and Instagram. Right?
So, I mean, like, Andy, when you say that they're trying to take a gun off the street, what was, I mean, that gun, did that gun have bullets? I mean, it was being used.
Oh, that's good. I like it.
But not being used for, I mean, I don't understand why.
I don't either.
I went immediately to pulling my hair out, but I went immediately to why is this happening to
explains a lot.
I mean, to I don't want it to happen, rather. I started it, I don't want it to happen, and now I'm sort of going back and going, what are they getting?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, I gotta admit that I didn't understand the $500 million valuation to begin with. I doubly didn't understand how this suddenly became worth $1 billion. I think what Facebook will get out of it is that Instagram will be the brand name for Facebook photo sharing. Right now, as much as some people don't like to hear it, Facebook really is the most popular photo sharing site on the entire internet. If they immediately now have the most popular photo sharing site in mobile space, that only enhances the value of Facebook as a site for that sort of thing. Also, their whole concept is your life is a timeline that should be shared with as many people as possible. Instagram really is that then and there app for people to immediately take a device out of their pocket and share an event with their circle of friends. So they might have felt that it was very, very competitive. But again, this to acquire Instagram's features into someone else's product could have possibly been the sort of thing that takes somebody off of the ropes and makes them viable again. And this is an industry with a short memory. Facebook could be no longer the Facebook of their category 5 years from now if they ignore that if the people start using and collecting information in a way that Facebook hasn't anticipated yet, and they have no product that can satisfy this new direction that the people are following into, that could be very expensive for them 4 or 5 years from now. But I do agree with you. I don't see how they're going to get $500 million worth of value out of this investment, let alone $1 billion of investment.
There's got to be.
We got to find that out.
Andy, when you had mentioned the idea of them being integrated into the platform, it made – I mean, what I thought of yesterday when I saw this is suddenly within a Facebook app on, you know, the iPad or the iPhone or any other device, you're going to see perhaps – and who knows – but perhaps you'd see, instead of snap a photo, the name of your photos is now Instagram. There's an Instagram little icon there you click, and you're able to take a photo right within Facebook, right within the Facebook app. So maybe the UI on Instagram doesn't change, but the Facebook UI changes.
You hate to make bold predictions, but I'd be really surprised if Instagram really had any presence as an independent entity a year from now. I really think that there's Facebook has started engulfing Instagram, and within a year or two's time, it's just going to be a name of a feature that's embedded into Facebook. And in terms of privacy controls, in terms of the simplicity of the experience, I don't think it'll be anything like what we're seeing today in Instagram.
All right, guys, who's next? Who's the next big acquisition? Maybe not by Facebook, but by Google, Facebook, Yahoo. Is Path the next on the block?
I was trying to think. Whatever we love, that's what they'll take.
So, damn them! It's true. Pinterest.
If you listen to my wife, it's Pinterest. For me, it's Path.
I do love Path. I really do. And I think why we like Path is because it's somewhat more private.
Right. And you get to share also a level of intimacy that you don't share on. I think, you know, Facebook in many ways for a lot of people, but maybe not. I have friends from high school that I'll check in on, see what they're doing on Facebook, and they're much more liberal with what they post on there, right? But I sort of reserve that for Path. I feel like I want to just reserve the more intimate details of
that
my life.
Insulates it. In fact, in a way, Dave Moore may have made a mistake. It insulates it against acquisition because. Yeah. Nobody wants to buy that because, in fact, that's the real question for Facebook, isn't it? Their number one job now is to reassure Instagram users, don't worry, don't leave, because if they bought anything, it ain't the interface, it ain't the programmers, it's the community.
And it's the data, too. I mean, how many of you by a show of hands, geotag just about every Instagram photo you take?
Just you and me, apparently.
I'm about 50-50.
I
never geotag anything.
And I'm worse. I cross-post. Not only do I – you never geotag anything. Andy's on the run from the law, I believe.
No wonder we couldn't find him today.
No, it's really hard to – geofencing doesn't really work very well the way that different apps have set it up right now. And so I'm very, very afraid that if I turn on locations for things that are useful, like, hey, I'm in the middle of the Boston's Public Garden. Here's where I took this picture. We should come here and see this. Then the next thing I know, I'm at a friend's house and – I've compromised this person's privacy by broadcasting. Here's where I'm right now. Here's the house of somebody that I like. And so it's until geofencing becomes absolutely bulletproof reliable and until more social networks like Facebook absolutely say that we'll tell people that the moment that we release the geolocation of a photo, you told us to stay private. We will find a top level executive and have him or her murdered on live television because that's how seriously we take it. Or maybe not murdered, but just humiliated. Just, you know,
I'm looking at my pictures. They're almost all. But that's partly because maybe you do this as well, Clayton. I don't use Foursquare directly.
No, I don't either.
So that's how I check in on Foursquare as well as with Instagram or Path. I always.
Right. So all of that geolocation data now being shared with Facebook is incredibly valuable as we move towards, you know, location-based advertising, things that are around you, things you found interesting.
Okay, one more question, then we're going to go to a break. This is a big question, and I want all three of you to answer it. Because, look, let's face it. If you carry a cell phone, you are geolocating everywhere you go. Is your location an important piece of private information? Because if I see you walking down the street, I know your location. How private is location information, Ken Ray? How private should it be?
I don't know how to answer that.
Do you hide your location?
Well, I mean, from what you just said about... No, I don't guess I do.
The reason I ask that is...
It's become so prevalent that we don't really think about it that much, do we? Unless we're Andy Anatko.
The police know where you are at all times. Because they can, for $1.50, check your cell carrier and say, where is he?
Right. Triangulation. Right. Figure out where you are. Boom,
pen register. Doesn't even require a search warrant. Is that something we want to protect? Is our location something we want to protect? What do you think, Clayton?
You know, it's funny you say that. I mean, I guess, you know, as I'm walking around with my iPhone turned on, geolocation services or location services turned on all the time. And, you know, my wife wants to make sure that I'm on, you know, Find My Friends or Latitude. So she knows when to pick me up from the train station. She just checks in on that rather than texting me and trying to find out exactly where I am. And maybe I'm half asleep. Yeah, I feel like in certain situations I'm very open about my location, and other times I'm very, very aware that, you know, I'm on my vacation. I don't want to tweet this particular location and have.
So it's like, it's situational,
right? It's very situational for me.
I think that's
within
accurate.
Within path, I never worry about it. That's, I think, the difference, right? Because you're friending individuals who you're close with. I don't ever think twice about putting the location in path, but in other situations, I always think about it.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Andy? Obviously, you do consider this important.
Like, and it's not only for my privacy, it's for the privacy of people that I hang out with. Mm-hmm. I'm very concerned about the fact that it is becoming harder and harder for anybody to opt out of being part of the social map. And I just think about how skeeved out someone could be to notice that. I might tweet something to, you know, I have 60,000 followers, but even if I only had like 400 or 500, if someone why did you broadcast your location to 200 absolute total strangers that I don't know?
Right.
Thank you for, you know, I might have to not invite you to the next cookout or the next party because I just don't want, it concerns me that information is out there, you know.
We've got exciting. I just feel like we're living in 1984 because no more privacy, period. Let's face it. B, the government clearly wants to know everything. So we're screwed. On that happy note, T-Mobile gets the iPhone. I'll explain what I mean in just a moment. But first, a word from Ford, our great friends at Ford. I mean, you know, Ford should have bought Instagram. What am I thinking? Ford.
Right, so we could drive and take pictures at the same time.
Brilliant idea. Ford knew right away, and not every car company knows this, that there was going to be this issue. Consumers, on the one hand, really want to be connected. In fact, I think it was Walt Mossberger said, you know, until recently, when you get in the car, you travel back to the 50s. You're driving. And, of course, despite the fact that we want to stay connected, there's this big issue about distracted driving. It's a huge problem. And I think Ford, early on, I saw this coming and said, look, we've got to create a way to solve the problem. Give consumers what they want, but not risk distracted driving. And they came up with a beautiful solution, which we talk about all the time, Ford Sync. The idea is you don't take your hands off the wheel. You don't take your eyes off the road. You don't look down at a screen. You don't twiddle a knob. You can do everything that you could do in a car. Tune a radio station. Make a phone call. Set the cabin temperature. Find a gas station. Get your horoscope, for crying out loud, with Ford Sync. And your voice. It's all voice activated. It's amazing. I have it in my 2010 Mustang, and I love it. Now, the newest Fords have Ford Sync plus App Link, and this is taking it to the next level. Ford has an API for your smartphone, iPhone, Android, Windows Phone, that developers can write apps that you control by your voice. So now you get in the car, the phone's connected either via Bluetooth or via USB, and all Ford Sync vehicles have a USB connector that goes, you know, right into your iPhone or your Android phone, and you just connect it up. And then you can talk to your phone and say things like, well, you have Pandora. You could say, play Pandora. Play my Pandora station, the Rolling Stones. You could thumbs up, thumbs down. You could say skip to the next one. You can even bookmark a song for purchase later on iTunes, all without taking your hands off the wheel and the eyes off the road. That's really cool stuff. You're still connected, but you're still safe. Ford's done a lot of research that shows we have more than sufficient cognitive ability to do this as long as you're focusing on what you're doing. You have plenty of ability to have a phone conversation. Actually, it's not even that complicated to say, play my Rolling Stones records. That's cool. Now they've got NPR has an app, so you can listen to news as well as NPR shows. There's iHeartRadio, which is the Clear Channel radio app. That means lots of radio stations, including all of my tech guy stations you can listen to. Just talk to the car. It's amazing. They even have a destinations app. So a lot of cars with Ford Sync don't have the big screen. Mine does, but they don't have the big, you know, GPS maps. But you can use your phone for it. Get access to navigation and directions through your smartphone, talking to it, hands on the wheel, eyes on the road. See that button? Boom. That's all you do. Yeah, the API platform is available. Yeah, it makes that sound. It actually makes a nice little tone chime. I would like it if it would go.
I'm jealous because I have the 2010 Ford Escape with Sync.
I don't have
the new
Link
one,
either.
And I want the app.
I want
app because I want Stitcher. I want to be able to play podcasts in there.
That's right. You could have dad on board.
Right.
That would be awesome.
That'd be very meta.
They also have a mobile application developer network. If you're a developer, you can use to contact Ford and say, I want to sync enable my app, and they'll work with you. I think there's a little scratch in there too. You can expect to see more sync enabled mobile apps. I'm not making a promise here that writing a check that Ford has to cash, but I suspect you can expect to see more sync enabled mobile apps going along for the ride in Ford vehicles. There's more all the time. Learn more at the website, ford.com/technology. Or, you know what? The best thing, go drive one today. I think the 2013s, the 2012 Focus, Fiesta. We tested it in a Fiesta, 2012 Fiesta. It was awesome. Sync and AppLink, what a marriage made in heaven. How do you like? You have an Escape? Yeah, you got the, yeah. See, you have the kid. You have to buy the van.
Head up to the mountains quite a bit, so we needed something with four-wheel drive. We test drove a ton of cars, and we test drove this early on, and we test drove a whole bunch of other ones, and we came back and said, just want the Ford Escape.
Yep.
You know, it was affordable, and it's been a great workhorse. It's been great.
Love it. So here's my thinking. T-Mobile. I love this. So AT&T has announced, they announced on Sunday that they will unlock your iPhone if you've had it in contract for the 2 years. Today we have more than 1 million unlocked iPhones running on the T-Mobile network, T-Mobile says. T-Mobile currently offers micro SIMs for customers who already have a GSM phone they want to use on the T-Mobile network, including an iPhone. In order to set up an unlocked iPhone on T-Mobile's network, just purchase a micro SIM card, select a T-Mobile plan that suits your needs, and you're using your iPhone on T-Mobile. And by the way, T-Mobile is a lot more affordable. They have a lot more affordable. Yeah, they have plans that are fairly, you know, like we're talking the, well, they have a.
But you pay for what you get, too.
You pay for what you get. Yep.
Yeah, they don't have full 4G rollout. And I guess some of the areas of the East Coast, I've been hearing different reports about different people showing up on their phones that they're getting HP, I can never say it, HSPA Plus.
Plus, right.
In certain areas. But yeah, they still don't have the full 4G rollout. But for $49 for
two lines.
And get two lines, it's great.
Yeah, unlimited text, 2 gigs of data. Well, no, I have my.
It's $49 for each line, right?
It's not each line. Yeah. Total is $99. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's
okay.
which is still
better than the $130 for AT&T.
But yeah, you have to put up with T-Mobile. So it would really come down to, do you have good T-Mobile? So here's the deal. Apple actually is apparently, according to the nextweb.com, the one doing the unlocking. Actually, Grant Paul. Who is an iPhone hacker and developer, did the research here. As of Sunday, if you're out of contract on your iPhone, you can either go to an AT&T store or an online chat at AT&T's website. All they need is your IMEI number, which is in the About This Phone dialogue.
One of the things I'm really excited about this is the international traveling.
Yeah.
Because if you've got, maybe you're like me, or maybe you're like one of my family members, klutzy, and you tend to drop phones or you tend to break phones. You may not want to bring your, you know, iPhone 4S if you've got that, or one of your new phones. And let's say you've got an old phone laying around. Maybe you've got one of the 3GS laying around.
What a good point.
You could pop that in. You could do the same thing there, and it's been unlock it, take it with you, and then maybe you don't need the highest data speeds because you're overseas for a short amount of time, and you don't want to suck up a lot of data anyway. You just want it to make text messages or just some
I didn't even think of that. You could do up to 5 devices a year, but that's a good point. If you have your old, if you didn't go to Gazelle like we keep telling you, and you have your old, which I do, I have an old 3GS. Which I've been keeping because, you know, my son has an iPhone 4, not a 4S, but a 4. And I just watch the glass, you know, it's broken, but I just watch it slowly peel away. And I know that, you know, after a month or two, he's going to want a new phone.
Right.
And so I have the 3GS ready and waiting for you, Henry. But now I'm thinking maybe I'll unlock it and I can bring it to, and I have my regular phone, but I can have an international phone. Now, can you get micro SIMs readily overseas?
I don't know about micro SIMs, but I know that SIMs are pretty easy to get. As a matter of fact,
so the 3GS would be fine.
Yeah, I mean, before you even leave Heathrow, you can go to just an automated kiosk, put in a credit card, and it's basically pop out £20 worth of Orange wireless. So that's awesome. That was my attraction. I mean, I do like AT&T's international roaming plan, and the 3 days I spent in Barcelona without an iPhone connected to a data plan were the worst 3 days of the last 10 years of my life. believe me, that I am going through my box of old iPhones, finding whichever the newest one could be unlocked, and immediately getting unlocked for exactly that purpose.
Well, I wonder if it'll work on the iPhone 1, because I still have that.
Do you really?
Oh, that's funny.
I do, too. It's in my museum.
Oh, and I love it. It's still one of the most beautifully designed pieces of hardware.
I have the original iPod, the original iPhone. I have a Newton. So I have a little glass case with, like, this classic technology.
But the funny thing is, I actually fired up charged and fired up my iPhone 1 for the first time in like 2 years. It really felt like a Chinese knockoff because the screen looked crummy. The transitions were like 4 frames per second.
Yeah.
I was like, my God, this was the Jesus phone? I don't think so.
3 hours of battery life. Yeah,
exactly.
So did you find it?
Hey, look! It's an edge connection. We'll get 3G someday.
Look at this. Well, now, what did Iaz give you? Oh, that's the original iPod. Yeah. Oh, it's a little dusty. Ooh, I have to dust my collection. There's the original iPhone. You're right. It does kind of feel a little. Wow. It's got the same fingerprints from 2007.
I wonder if this is what the iPhone 5 is going to look like.
That rumor that says, it's going to have like a unibody chassis.
You know what's exciting about this?
That people want it so much, and it sounds like that.
They can really push this because they say now with plastic for better antenna work. Because they were smart enough to have a plastic bottom in those days so that the antenna would actually work.
Wow. Just thinner, you know. But
yeah, it's not.
I mean, how are they going to fit? You know, all the rumors, of course, about a larger iPhone in the fall. But how? You know, my question is, how are they going to fit if they do keep it at 3.5 inches? How are they going to, you know, fit an LTE chip in there?
Right.
Would be the first, right? That would be the first
the battery. Yeah.
Oh, there's the SIM slot. I could actually use this. That'd be kind of retro. I'll save it for another 5 years and pull it out. It'd be like Michael Douglas in Wall Street. Wow, that phone is so huge.
Sometime there's going to have to be a film, right? There's going to be some Hollywood film where it's going to take place in, 2006, 2007? And they're going to need a whole bunch of iPhones, right? They're going to need a bunch. And so if you have a whole bunch of them on hand, just wait for Hollywood to come calling.
I was watching something the other day, and there was a lot of cell phone activity. It was all iPhones. And I thought, boy, that's not going to date. That's not going to age well. But then maybe it will. Maybe it will.
Yeah, I have this idea.
iPads.
Right.
My own Instagram idea that'll make me $1 billion is, you know how like James Cameron spent all that money to update Titanic for 3D. If you really want to update movies so that you can re-release it, take the movies from like 1988 and just digitally replace like the CRT TV with a flat screen. Digitally remove like the huge shoebox phone for like an iPhone. You can do this. Those are the only cues that people have that these things are not happening in 2012. Costs you a lot less money. I think there's more return on the investment.
You got to pity the poor Wall Street analysts who really can't say anything much new about Apple except buy more Apple stock. Every once in a while, though, you get an outlier from BITG Research. A guy named Walter Piecyk has cut his Apple buy rating to a neutral. He says to investors, this Apple thing just can't go on. he says, telecoms, get this, are growing weary of paying high subsidies for the iPhone with returns that don't match Apple's high margins. In other words, Apple's making more than the cell phone companies, so they're just going to stop carrying iPhones. I don't think so.
Because it's all about what the carriers want. It's not about consumer demand.
Yeah.
That word.
Yeah.
I agree with that, too. But there is maybe some kernel of truth to that when you certainly see what they were doing with this launch the other day.
That phone. Now, have you been carrying that as your full-time phone? He's got the Nokia Lumia 900.
Yeah, I've been carrying it just as equally as I've been carrying the iPhone 4S. Yeah. And, you know,
that doesn't count. That does not count.
I can't. Because there are too few.
You have to give up your iPhone if you're going to really.
and it does not take.
As equally. I'm carrying this as equal. No, you're not.
In one pocket. I don't carry a wallet anymore. I don't pay for anything.
I do. I mean, I it's hard to review a phone if you've got an iPhone because it's like, well, I don't really want
to
give up.
No,
the
but
iPhone,
for about but. A week prior to the launch, or prior, you know, I had it an early release and I was playing with it.
It's
nonstop.
Pretty amazing.
I really kept the iPhone away as much as I could, and yeah, it's a beautiful phone. But to the point of them being perhaps more interested in the lower amount of money that they're going to get for. That goes back to Apple. I mean, look, they spent $150 million, AT&T did, behind the Lumia 900 as part of this launch, which, of course, launched on Easter Sunday.
Yeah, that was smart. Yeah, let's see. Let's launch our hot new phone on a day when all our stores are closed. I guess they were worried about people lining up and causing traffic problems. Wow.
There was a wonderful, I can't remember who it was that wrote it, but somebody was like, yeah, it's actually pretty smart because then if sales don't go well, you can say, well, it was Easter.
Yeah. It's not our fault.
Yeah.
What are people going to do?
Golly.
There's also somebody bragging about how it was the number one most ordered phone on Amazon. And I said, yeah, because so many other stores were kind of closed. The people who were out shopping were probably more shopping from home than going out to a store on that Sunday.
I kind of feel bad because we've been letting Alex Gumpel in our office use and review this. He's our only really kind of dedicated Windows users. Unfortunately, I'm showing his pictures now on national television. And
some nudes in there, too.
I just feel kind of bad. I don't know if Alex really knew that we'd be doing.
I really wanted to like this phone. I think maybe more than I did. I think, Andy, you maybe said it best a few weeks ago that there's still a few holes.
Well, it's apps, right? There's no Instagram, right?
Well, and, you know, look, Internet Explorer on here is I've had nothing but problems with
really?
Internet Explorer on here. And, you know, just trying to load web pages. I know yours is loading perfectly there. But where even in my video review, and I was on LTE in the middle of Midtown Manhattan on LTE, which, you know, every other phone that I test on LTE is really fast, just would hang up. I couldn't get web pages to load. And I know other people, I think even Walt Mossberg reported having issues loading web pages on Wi-Fi.
Right.
And I actually talked to somebody from Nokia about this, and they said they're looking into it. They have R&D looking into it right now and trying to figure out what's going on here. So
I still can't. I'm trying to load Twit. It isn't loading. Let me see if I can load. Let's see. Leoville. There's one of my favorite little small blog sites. There's Twit finally loaded. Yeah, you're right. Maybe that was a Twit problem.
It seems like certain websites, and I can't figure out, even if mobile optimized websites as well. Like,
really?
You would think, well, you're not having as many photos to worry about it.
Right.
Rendering in kilobits instead of megabytes, and still not loading quickly. Mm. But do love the hardware.
Yeah, I just think it's a beautiful phone. But, you know, it's too late. I don't know if it's too little too late, but it's definitely too late.
I don't know about that.
Too late
you
for
disagree?
What?
I think that everybody has an iPhone.
Yeah, no. But I mean, $99 and Microsoft supposedly paying between a $10 and $15 bounty for every.
Right. Well, they had to do that because other carriers do that. They weren't getting AT&T wasn't recommending the Windows phones, so they kind of had to do that.
Well, but I mean, you've got at least three different prongs there, though. You've got Microsoft doing that, and then I think it was Nokia ponying up something like $25 million to make this the free phone for AT&T. So it's not just a matter of for AT&T employees. So it's not just a matter of, okay, you guys sell this because you'll make some more money. But then it's also, by the way, if you want a free phone from us, here's your free phone. Get to know it, get to love it, and go ahead and start using it. And then you've got AT&T spending $150 million. I don't remember. I mean, everybody keeps talking about. And correct me if I'm wrong, because it's been 4.5 years now, but everybody keeps talking about, well, AT&T is spending more on this than they spent on the iPhone launch. Did AT&T spend real money on the iPhone launch? I mean, there was so much talk for 6 months before that. And I remember AT&T honestly acting a little PO'd when I came in the first day of the iPhone launch, just because I happened to pass two of them. And they seem really more annoyed that I was there asking about the iPhone than anything. I mean, they're behind this phone now. Yeah.
Yeah.
But all the signage, because they weren't used to having customers in their stores before. So when you walked in, they were shocked to see someone in there. All the signage that was up in those stores. Remember that they had that giant iPhone, which I always wanted.
Oh, I love that. It was running Windows. I loved that, too.
Yeah, it was. And you know, had all the signage in there inside the AT&T store. So I think
I bet you could get those giant iPhones really cheap right now.
I bet that they were carved up before they were returned.
That's a bummer because it would be really cool to have one of those in here.
That's usually with display stuff like that. They don't just simply send them back. They said you have to destroy it and then send it back to us. That's the pieces. But I do want to say that, I mean, the handsets is really one of the areas in which Apple, I wouldn't go so far as to call them vulnerable, but which they don't really have total dominance yet. I mean, one of the metrics that not only is you're talking about the entire installed user base of Android, granted that's split across several different OS releases that are so different that they may as well be four different types of operating systems. But when I just go out and about, and my eyes always get glanced strictly to, like, what kind of computer is this person using? What kind of handset are they using? Do I recognize the app that they're using? And there are plenty of rooms in which all I see are iPhones, but there are also plenty of rooms in which I see more Androids than anything else out there. So if there is any place for a company like Microsoft if they're going to disabuse themselves of the notion that they could beat the iPhone at anything, but there's certainly enough options out there that consumers want to pursue, that if you do a good job and make it distinct from everything else, and that is definitely what Windows Phone is, you could probably make some money off of this.
You're right, and not even just Android. Yesterday I was at the Phillies game, and I saw tons of flip phones. Yeah, people just popping out little.
Well,
flip
that's
phones
Phillies fans. Taking, I think that's just.
Right. Well, no, see, yeah, again, I'm on a college campus. I'm surprised at how many feature phones I'm seeing here. You'd think that these are the kids out there with the bebop music and the long hair and their jazz records and their iPhones, but
people can't afford it. Let's face it. I mean, the reason you continue to use a feature phone is the. You know, it's $100 a month to use a smartphone, or at least 50 if you're at T-Mobile. One-third of all high school students, according to Piper Jaffray, have an iPhone. One-third. And 40% of surveyed students say they want or will purchase an iPhone in the next 6 months. That's the largest number ever. They've been doing this every year for 23 years. 5,600 U.S. high school students, 34%, an all-time high, have an iPhone. Double the percentage a year ago. So
hey, can we go back for a second to Pycheck, though? And this actually ties into that, because there were two other things. There were two other reasons that Pycheck dropped his rating from buy to neutral.
This is the analyst who says, don't buy Apple stock, he's bad.
Right. The first one was that Verizon, AT&T, and Sprint, which is kind of funny, may abandon the iPhone. Sprint especially. Sprint's. They're in.
They spent a lot of money
near term, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The second reason was that Apple may go ahead and drop the price of the iPhone, which would, of course, you know, lower the amount of money that they could make from it. I guess that would be to battle the Verizons and AT&Ts in the world of dropping the phone. But the third thing is, his third reason was that Apple may not come out with a revolutionary product this year. And he said in his note,
they may not.
He said in his note that the evolution of the mobile space and of the tablet space, the evolution of what they've already got, will continue. But they might not do anything revolutionary, and that might make people worry, and that might send Apple shares down. And then you go to what you've got right there with the high school students. What was it again? A third of them?
A third, and going to 40% in the next 6 months.
They're probably there forever, because then go back to every other analyst, not forever, because forever is a long, long time, as the song goes. But I mean, they're locked in now because they have Instagram and they have, you know, iTunes and they have iCloud. If they've got more than one, I mean, the music that they're buying through iTunes now can always be downloaded back to that phone. It can't be downloaded to the Lumia 900. I mean, you can move it because they're unprotected DRM-free MP3s at this point, but you know, that's not the same as, oh, I remember I deleted that song because I wanted to download this, but now I hate that. I want that song back. Boom. Mm-hmm.
Right. Boom. It's the broader ecosystem, and maybe he has a short memory too, because remember right at Christmas, what was the number one most requested toy or whatever on teenagers' wish lists? Was the iPad. The number one across the board. And I think it wasn't number two, like the iPhone.
There's no question. This is what kids want if they can afford it. And it really comes down to what mom and dad are going to pony up for. I think that I can only say, I mean, the fact that Pycheck doesn't know that Sprint has a two-year contract to buy every iPhone that they can make just shows that this guy is I don't know. Maybe he just wanted to be the other guy. Everybody says buy, and he's hoping that if Apple tanks, which is like one chance in 100, then he's got his career is made, right? He's the only guy who said it.
I get to spend quite a bit of time at the Fox Business Network and doing a bunch of different hits and discussion about technology over there. And I'm always surprised by at least what's driving the day on Wall Street ends up being an analyst report.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you, it seems like over the past three, 4 years, yeah, the number of times that they've been wrong, maybe it's been 90% of the time. So it's remarkable to me to see these stock swings in this way. And I'm not a financial guy, but for people who are as clearly clueless, I mean, how many times has Gene Munster been wrong about the Apple TV?
Constantly.
Yeah. Oh, that's not really fair. He'll be wrong at the end of this year if he's going to be wrong. I'm sorry. I'm not saying he's going to be wrong. But he
you're thinking there will be
said,
there will be an Apple TV or not?
I pass. I don't know. I hate the idea. I've said a million times I hate the idea. But either way, Munster has always said by the end of 2012.
You want another analyst? So,
in fairness to him.
Here's another analyst. this guy is with Jefferies. His name is Peter Misek. He upped his price target for Apple. He's saying buy. He says it'll get to $800 because of the iPanel, a TV set to launch later this year that's so much more than a TV. The iPanel is a display. It's a gaming center. It's a media hub. It's a computer. It's a home automator, etc., says Misek.
It's a floor watch. It's a dessert time.
Etc.
It will save your troubled marriage.
He says it will cost an average selling price of $1,250 with 30% gross margins. Wow.
Andy, it may just save a troubled marriage. I'm going to back you up on this one.
It's not just a TV set.
It's been the source of some consternation in my house when my wife gives me the five-minute media warning. Okay, dinner's almost ready. We're doing five-minute media warning.
We get those, too.
Get your movie that we're going to watch ready. And I'm like, is it on Netflix? No, is it on iTunes? Is it on the Apple TV? I can't remember where it is.
You need a Google TV.
Do I need to do home sharing?
If you had Google TV, then you could search all of those, and it would tell you where, and then it would crash, and you wouldn't have to. You could go play cards. It'd be great.
Then we could sit and talk, and that may actually save.
Save your marriage, yeah, because it would just. No, actually, I like my Google TV, but I know that I'm the only one in the world. We're going to take a break. When we come back, it's the end of innocence for Apple users. The flashback Trojan. Now 600,000 strong, and I haven't checked the numbers today. Apple did make a patch, though, last week. We'll talk about that in a second. Before we do, can I talk about Hover.com? Hover is domain name registration and management made simple. It's just fantastic. I get tweets now all the time from people who say, you were right. Thank you for telling me about Hover.com. One of the things they don't put in their ad copy, I'm just going to tell you, if you go to MacBreak, type this in, MacBreak.Hover.com, you'll see at the top of the page there's a phone number, 866-731-6556. If you call that number and say, I'm listening to Leo on Twit, and I want you, at no charge to me, to transfer all my domains to Hover. They charge $25 for this concierge service. Please don't do what I did. I said, oh no, I'm going to save $25. I'll do this myself. And I still have domains that are locked over at GoDaddy. And I can't, they just, Hover will do it for you. They charge $10 for each domain registration transfer, but that's another year, includes another year on the domain name. So you're making out like a bandit. Call them and get that transfer over. You will thank me. If you're about to register new domains, go to hover.com. Let's see, I need a new domain for, what should my new domain name be? Photo sharingapp.com. I think I've got an idea for a new app, never before seen, and I'll search for that. Now, I have a feeling that's gone, but we'll see. Whenever you got a domain name idea, you want to go in there, log in. Yeah, somebody's got it, but look, here's something interesting. There's some stars next to some of the suggestions. These are premium domains that somebody said, I'm willing to sell these, and they set the price. So, you know, one of the problems I have when I go to buy a domain is they say, that'll be $1 billion. This way, the price is already set. You know what you'll pay for it. If you see a domain with a star on it, it's a domain that you can get for a very photosoftware.com. That's available. That's not bad. For $16.49. Photoa.com. Photopo.com. So these are premium domains. Hover has this new thing, and I love it, the premium domain name market. They also have clunker trade-ins. If you, as I do, often register names that I'm never going to use again. You know, something I thought was a good idea at 3 a.m. and you never use it, they will refund everything you've spent at Hover.com to you. They'll give it back to you. That's nice. You got to love that. Hover.com. Go to MacBreak.Hover.com. Give them a try today. They have a no-hold policy for phone calls that come in during business hours. I love the domain management console, too. Just clean. There's just not a lot of clicks, see? It's just very straightforward. I guess I can give up shutupandplay.tv now. I don't really need that anymore. Okay. I have all my, if you're a ham, you registered your ham call letters. Yeah, I have. And then you just forward it to my regular site. It's just really cool. If you need a non-premium domain, a standard domain, use the offer code MacBreak 10% off. To trade in a clunker, call the customer service number on their website or email them at help@hover.com, and they'll help you get your money back. Love that. MacBreak.hover.com. Give them a try today. They're really nice people. They're Canadian, so you know they're going to be very kind and nice. GameOnShow.com, GameOnShow.tv. Anybody want to? I could put those on maybe I'll save it just in case. You never know. All right, let's move on. The flashback Trojan or virus. It's so funny how many emails I get. Because some people say, oh, it's not a Trojan. And then some people say, oh, they were calling it a virus, and that's a Trojan. It was a Trojan. Now it's a virus. You could even say it's a worm. According to drweb.com, which is a Russian antivirus site, 600,000 Mac owners are infested, 57% of them in the U.S., another 20 or 30% in Canada. The way you got it last year was it was a Trojan. You'd click a link to download a fake flash updater. Most recently, it has come in as through a hole in Java. Oracle, which owns Sun, which owns Java, patched that hole in February. Apple took a little longer. If you think back, you remember there was a lawsuit, blah, 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 blah. The Apple Java is not made by Sun. It's made by Apple. They didn't update that till Wednesday. They have updated it. If you haven't run your updates, get your update, because that hole allows a malicious website just to get into your system. There is a flashback checker. I'd probably recommend this one from Infinite Loop. Jackie Cheng writing about it yesterday at Ars Technica. It's just an Apple script. You can just run it and check for your infection. There's a simple terminal command. If you're comfortable with terminal, that might be safer. I always get nervous about downloading apps to check for malware, because that's one way bad guys get on your system. Is it the end of innocence, Andy Yannotko?
More of a wake-up call. I mean, more of an end of stupidity. People who might have thought that the reason why Macs don't have viruses or Trojans or malware is because they've been blessed by God with absolute impenetrability and invisibility to bad people. You know, that was an illusion that this has finally been smashed, because there are just so many components that Apple doesn't control, so many components that Apple might not have updated frequently enough. There's every time there's like a hacking contest where, you know, there's the MacBook that's been set up on a pedestal that if you can change a web page on that device, you win $1,000. That $1,000 gets won in about 10 minutes.
And it's usually the first computer to get hacked, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Chiefly because of just what you're talking about how Microsoft has actually had a bigger and more public problem with malware. And so that means that they are really a lot more aggressive about fighting it. Apple has always cared about that sort of stuff. They cared about it enough to make it a big part of their advertising campaigns a few years ago. But it's like fireproofing a house that has never been on fire. Right. They're not as paranoid about it as Microsoft has been, which is why since Vista, Windows has actually been on a simple basis of the number of security holes that can be exploited, Windows has been harder to exploit than even the modern version of the Mac OS. So, yeah, it's a wake-up call.
Yeah. And Age of Innocence is over, if ever there was one. Yep. What do you recommend? Do people run out and buy antiviruses?
Not yet, because I've yet to see an antivirus kit that really attacks the problem that's being presented right now. Antivirus kits are best for going after known threats that they could actually be identified and scanned for, and also looking for processes that are inherently dangerous. And the only ones that are effective are the ones that are so paranoid about processes that it doesn't understand that you uninstall it in about a day because it's just there's just too much hassle.
I liked Little Snitch, but that's exactly what happened with Little Snitch.
Yeah, exactly.
I couldn't bear it. By the way, if you had Little Snitch running on your system, Flashback would say oops and would get out of there. It would delete itself.
Also, it bears mentioning that the next version of the Mac OS is going to have countermeasures exactly against this sort of thing, where if Apple's system of code of signed code really works, not only will it be that much harder for unrecognized code to enter the system, but also the system will have a way of recognizing that it's been tampered with and to block operations of errant code. We'll have to find out how well this works. I've been talking to a lot of developers about how Apple is implementing this, the sort of threats that it could solve, the sort of threats that it could do nothing to solve, and the sort of innocent things that seem to be impossible now if you're following Mountain Lion's rules. But for now, I don't think that anybody has ever established this sort of credibility as an antivirus maker to warrant going out and spending $50 for any such a product.
Yeah. You guys feel cheated, ripped off? I know you're both Mac users. Mac OS, Ken, you've been following the Mac operating system since practically day one. There was a long time a debate. Are Apple's inherently more secure, or just is it that hackers haven't attacked them? Which does this now prove it, that they are, in fact, just as insecure?
Well, Andy says that this is a wake-up call, and he's right, but we get this wake-up call, it seems to me, for the last 5 years.
It's not the first time.
Months, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you say our innocence is over. I think the story, and I don't know why I remember this line, but the line that I used, I want to say in 2006 or 2007, was our time in Eden is over.
Yeah.
Because there was some malware that came along.
Did you bite the apple?
I mean, this is just, it's part of it now. And it's kind of a drag, and it's still safer because there's still not as much. But yeah, if people were just saying, well, Macs never get viruses, I mean, that's, or never have to worry about malware or don't have to worry about security, that's foolish and wrong.
I actually started to steer people. I used to steer them towards Macs. I now steer them towards iPads. The people who are really like just not sophisticated, they just want email and they don't want to worry about security. An iPad's secure, right?
We had an issue recently with a family member who's 71. And over the past year, he has twice broken his MacBook and just through something that he shouldn't have been doing with it. And I, in my head, started having the discussion with him about, you know what you really might want?
Yeah.
Because I think that's more than enough for him. I honestly do believe that would be
for most people.
For him. Now, luckily, it's been salvageable. His MacBook has been fixable both times. But I mean, at some point,
what did he do? I mean, did he? Is it malware? Did he?
I don't want to tell you. No.
Okay.
He cleaned it with water. Okay, there. It's, you know, he's
you know, that would break an iPad too. In fact, I know very well it's not good for an iPhone either.
Right. So yeah. But I mean, you know, at least you can take a tissue or something. I mean, you know, and wipe the screen of an iPad and accomplish about the same thing that you would hopefully not want to accomplish putting water on a keyboard of an iPad. I have a MacBook.
What do you guys think about any sort of antivirus software on the Mac? I mean, I know Andy just answered it in part, but I'm always struck by when I go home to visit my parents, and the computer guy that my dad insists on using, that he's used for like 20 years, pops over to the house and immediately installs all of these antivirus software programs on this computer. And my dad wants to know when I show up why it's now so slow.
Right.
And all he does is get on to check email. That's the only thing my dad, he's a realtor. He gets on, he goes into email and he launches his MLS program. That's all he needs. He's not downloading all sorts of ridiculous attachments. And I warn him about doing anything like that. He's like, I never do that. So why do you need this stuff? And it slows his computer down so much that I uninstall it. And I know I'm curious what Steve Gibson would say about that, but is that a bad thing?
Steve does not use an antivirus. A lot of people I know, I don't use an antivirus on any computer, including Windows, because if you know what you're doing, you don't need an antivirus. The problem is the people who need an antivirus are people like Ken, like your family member or others who just don't know what to do. You know, they see, for instance, this Flashback Trojan worked because, oh, you need to update your Flash. But it didn't look like Adobe. You go to a site, it's not Adobe's site. And you know, we would go, yeah, right, I'm not downloading that. It's the inexperienced novice user, and I suppose those are the ones who need some help.
But does something like Mac Keeper, would something like that even work in that situation, or would you be better?
I have some recommendations, in fact, that I will make as my tip of the week. How about that? Let's move along. I want to get a couple more stories in here before we get our picks of the week. Walter Isaacson responds. You remember that Larry Page, in an interview last week in Business Week, said, oh, I think that was theater. I don't think Steve Jobs really wants to kill Android. Walter Isaacson, in an interview this week, said that probably he discussed the petulance and exuberance of Jobs. And he said, you know, Tim Cook's going to settle with Google. He said, this isn't going to go on much longer. Steve gets upset. Steve was furious when he saw Microsoft, this is a quote, stealing the Mac OS interface and licensing it to every PC maker who paid for it. So when Google licensed its Android mobile operating system so promiscuously to junky handset makers, he was determined to act. Steve said to Google, you can't pay me off. I'm here to destroy you, but Tim Cook will settle that lawsuit. He's a lot less emotional about business than Steve. Why are you laughing, Nandy?
Oh.
We may never know.
Bummer. Bummer.
The comments where you're saying about how this was all for show, really. He was just trying to get his troops excited about what they were working on. Oops, sorry. which is like, does this sound at all like the way that Steve Jobs does business? Not really quite so much. But yeah, it does make sense that realize the very first thing that Steve Jobs did when he arrived in back in the CEO's chair was start settle lawsuits that he felt were mostly unproductive for what Apple needed to do. They were costing way too money. They were causing them to focus on exactly the wrong things. At some point, you got to realize that you can't. The ability to undo Google releasing Android as a knockoff of the iPhone, that opportunity lapsed about 4 years ago when Steve Jobs had the tracer missiles aimed at the proper offices inside Google and decided to be talked out of actually pushing the commit button. So now you just simply have to live in the world that you live in.
Right. Some other things that Isaacson said, despite the loss of Jobs, Apple will still create more great products. It has, quote, the world's greatest industrial designer, Johnny Ive. He said Jobs was, quote, the most intense, emotionally charged person you could ever meet. When asked, well, did Steve suffer, as it's sometimes presumed that others in the tech industry do, from Asperger's syndrome? He said, Steve wasn't kind. He was brutally honest, but he was intensely emotional and cried many times when we talked. He was at the opposite end of the scale to Asperger's. His products prove he could emotionally connect to people unseen and that he would, in 100 years, rank alongside the great inventors, Henry Ford, Thomas Edison. I think that there's no doubt about that. Let's see here. A couple more stories before we make our break. Let's quickly talk about the iPhone 5. We kind of mentioned that. We're starting to see rumors now. October launch, you guys?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. We're all in agreement.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think, well, who knows, right? They, as Apple said recently, they don't like to be predictable.
But some guy in Foxconn says.
Right.
The head of human resources at Foxconn says, we got to hire a bunch of people now because we're going to be putting out that new iPhone in October.
And presumably, if that's true, that's the same guy who just, last week, met with Tim Cook and gave him the hairnet when they walked around the factory floor.
This looks so good on you, Tim. Right. Really, everybody wears them here.
But again, interesting to me, more than the stuff we probably already know, which is 1 gigabyte of RAM. It'll have the next generation chipset in there.
Unibody.
Yeah, is it going to have that unibody construction, much like the iPhone 1 we were joking about? But will it have, and how is it going to handle this? A larger next generation wireless chip in there. That's more interesting to me. I was just talking with a friend yesterday about this very issue because, to our knowledge, we couldn't think of another 3.5 inch phone in that same form factor that has an LTE chipset in it. And maybe there is one out there.
That's interesting. So you're actually saying that the LTE could drive the 4 inch phone that everybody keeps saying for years and years that Apple is going to eventually come out with?
The question is there no 3.5-inch LTE phone because you can't fit it in or because no one wants a 3.5-inch phone anymore?
That's still not true.
Well, there's people are buying iPhones, obviously, which is 3.5 inches. But I do think that the world is moving towards larger screens. Of course, I'm the guy who's using a Galaxy Note, so.
I think this is a case of the marketplace making a very, very strong vote. If people actually preferred a 3.5-inch size phone to 4-inch, you'd see a lot more viable 3.5-inch handsets out there. I don't think it's. I do think that cramming a larger battery in an LTE chipset is also a factor in the drive towards larger phones. But if people really, really demanded a smaller form factor, there would be a lot, much larger presence out there. And I agree with you, Clayton. I was trying to figure that out myself about a month ago, that how many, going through every single product listing, trying to find how many smaller handsets I could find. And the only ones that I could find were the ones that were deliberately designed not to compete directly with the expensive high contract phones. So, I mean, Apple's it's puzzling because Apple is starting to run out of things they can add to an iPhone to make it look fresh each and every year. And everybody's going to start really expecting LTE on these handsets. And if I don't know how Apple feels about it, but whether they would rather preserve what they feel to be the perfect size and the perfect form factor for the iPhone and simply wait for the chips to become less power hungry and smaller to make it happen, or if they're willing to say, well, this was a good idea for the first generation of phone screen, but you know what? The reasons why we decided to stick with 3.5 are no longer really operative. The fact that other companies are having so much success with a 4-inch phone means that people want it. If we can make it work, we'll make it work. I don't know what Apple feels about it right now. I think it'll come down to whether they feel as though a 4-inch phone could really be beautiful and elegant. I do think that's going to be an important factor for them to consider.
And even more important than the hardware, because I think we always, maybe not we, but I think we sometimes forget the idea that what really drives the innovation right now on the iPhone, or the most appealing factor about it, is iOS and iOS 6 and what that will look like. Will it be revolutionary? Will it be not scrapped and rebuilt from the ground up, but it's going to have, you know, all by all accounts, a lot of new things in it, and it may have a totally different look. And that may be the first really interesting challenge in this space for Apple in that way, to see how different. I'm reminded of a Police story. Everyone expected, I love the Police. Everyone expected when they were working on their next album, all of these bands.
Oh, those Police. I thought you were talking about the Police Department. Oh, Sting and the Police. Okay, go ahead.
Sting and the Police in the early 80s, one of my favorite bands. They were... all these other copycat bands were popping up, and they were sort of mimicking the Police sound, and everyone sort of expected their next album to have that same sort of sound. Here's the Police again, and then they came out with Synchronicity, and it sounded nothing like what they were had done before, and it sort of blew everyone away. And so you wonder what Apple has in the pipeline for iOS 6. That's, to me, perhaps more more curious than what piece of RAM is in this thing.
I do agree, though, with that analyst, Pychik, who says, well, you kind of run out of things you can do that are so revolutionary. You've got to start going evolutionary. We've seen that on the desktop, although now we're going, I don't know, speech interfaces and tablet interfaces. Maybe it isn't out of steam. Maybe there is more you could do with iOS 6. I would say more speech would be good, right?
Yeah, I use it all the time. I mean, I dictate emails on a regular basis.
One
of those journaling apps. I was a terrible journaler before. Hated the thought of sitting down for an hour and writing something like that. When it would pain me. So now instead, I walk around. I'm able to do some yard work and dictate my day into a day one journal that I love. And so I use it all the time for writing emails. But deeper integration there, especially with third party apps, being able to use it in a more convenient way. I think you're going to see a lot of that, and maps. Obviously, some of the interesting things that are happening in the mapping world right now, inside buildings, where you can be inside of a mall, that sort of stuff, shopping. So I don't know. It'll be curious. I think you're right, though. What more do we need? I can't. Right. It's not like I'm sitting there. I wake up in the morning like, God, I wish I had. This.
I think speech is it. I really do. In fact, I've been using the speech so much on the iPad and the iPhone to answer email that actually it's starting to feel onerous to sit down at my Mac and type That's not good. But this is really interesting. I'm noticing that I'm getting used to speech so much that typing is starting to feel like a chore. And if we do get to that point, if others get to that point, there may be that that completely replaces the keyboard. That would be a major shift.
Mm-hmm. Well, it would also be a major shift.
Go ahead, start Ken, and then we'll give you.
Forgive me. I'm still stuck back on the 3.5 to 4 inch screen. I mean, there's got to be a better reason than because everybody's doing it. I mean, where it's still
because customers because you don't want to look like you're old, and 3.5 inches looks old.
It's not strictly. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'll come by later. Go.
Forgive me, if it's still the number one selling smartphone on all of the, at least here in the States, on all of the carriers where they sell it.
Well, that's why you make changes, because if you wait until the sales start dropping off, you've got a problem, right? Well, you got to kind of look a little bit ahead, Ken. You can't just say, hey, this is selling great. Let's not change it, because that could hurt you in the long run.
Well, but there been one? I mean, I'm not saying you wait for sales to fall off, but has there been one yet where sales have?
One 3.5-inch phone? No one makes them anymore.
No, an iPhone.
Well, I think to Andy's point, nobody makes a 3.5-inch phone because no one wants it. The iPhone may be surviving based on iOS, but I think you've got to really address that issue.
Yeah. So then in terms of usability, though, are the companies that are coming out with 4-inch phones or greater doing that? For the most part, and I'm not speaking for all of them, I'm not speaking for any of them, are for the most part, are they doing that because they've really found a way to use that extra half inch across?
Yeah, the keyboard works better.
Okay.
Period.
All right.
Andy, your thoughts.
It wasn't initially just about differentiation.
No, it's about functionality.
Okay.
It's not about putting out a 4-inch screen because that's what everyone else is doing. It's more of recognizing that the fact that these phones are popular means that that's sort of a vote that the marketplace is making, that they actually kind of like 4-inch phones, which is also not in itself a reason for Apple to switch, but it's a reason for them to look at the decisions that they made about why did we make the phone exactly this size. And then 3 years later, 4 years later, probably closer to 5 years later, after they made that, I'm sorry, 4 years later, after they made that decision, now they have to ask themselves, do we still feel that strongly that 3.5 inches is integrally important to the design of this phone? And if they decide that, well, actually, no, I think that the reason why we've been using a 3.5 inch for the past 2 years is because that's the size it's always been, that gives them the option now of saying, well, what would we do with a 4-inch phone? How can we make this better? And as long as they could do that without them feeling as though they're compromising the simplicity and the elegance of the iPhone, that suddenly becomes on the table.
Does that, in your opinion, then come down to whose idea it was in the first place? I mean, if it was, again, not to pull an Isaacson or whatever you want to call it, but if Steve Jobs was the one who really lobbied for the 3.5-inch, and if Steve Jobs were still alive, then obviously we're not even talking about
this. Yeah, but that was in 2007.
But my question is, does it come down to, you know, who is most strongly behind it at this point, or is it, I mean, do we see it as a foregone conclusion then that it is going to have a bigger screen?
No, I don't think it's a foregone conclusion, but I think that the scales might be moving towards if there are advantages that Apple can see to doing a 4-inch screen, then now they're probably more receptive to doing that because it's been 3 years now. Sometimes your philosophy changes after 3 years. 3 years ago, every single screen was 3.5-inch. They didn't have all this data coming in about 4-inch screens to go by. I mean, if when Samsung released the Galaxy Tab as a 7-inch tablet and they started selling gangbuster quantities of these tablets, Apple wouldn't have concluded that they made the wrong choice in a 10-inch, but they would have said, okay, we now have evidence that there are 10 million people who want a 7-inch tablet, despite the fact that it's running this crummy scaled-up phone operating system, and they would certainly learn from that. And also, let's also not forget that sometimes Steve's opinions from the reports that we've been reading isn't just simply he made a decision and that was it. Sometimes other people would say, well, no, Steve, you're wrong. Here's the evidence of why it should go that way. And then two meetings later, Steve is saying, well, we made a great decision. I was wrong. We're going with a 4-inch phone, or we're going with this layout for this app. There's so many stories like that it's hard to say that because Steve chose the 3.5-inch form factor 3 years ago, that would be a factor in continuing that size carrying on.
There's a good article on The Verge in the Apple Core about a 4-inch iPhone 5. We've talked before about, well, all you do is you keep the same 960 by 640 resolution. You just blow it up to a bigger size. But that causes some issues. It certainly is no longer a retina display unless, and this is what the author in The Verge is suggesting, you change the aspect ratio from 3:2 to 9:5. You make it somewhat taller. I don't know if this is a good idea or not. I think that one of the reasons people want bigger phones is so that they can look at HD video. And that's going to be a problem if Apple wants to keep the same screen resolution. It's an interesting...
Yeah, and also the main argument that comes up for maintaining the 3.5-inch screen is that the average thumb can span the entire screen
right.
One swipe.
And you do lose that on these bigger screens, I admit.
Right. And so if they decided to go with that, keep the same width and stretch it up a little bit,
right.
Now you have a whole top row of stuff that you can't access with the thumb. If you're going to do that, why not make it a little bit bigger and maintain the same aspect ratio and not even care about having a new class of apps that uses this different size screen?
That would be that's of course the issue. Apple doesn't want to fragment that much.
Leo, I'm supposed to be talking about interstellar space two floors below me in about 5 minutes. So.
Andy, give us your pick of the week. How about that?
My pick of the week is a really cool app that I found a week ago. Us old timers who were around with the Mac at the beginning have a certain nostalgic connection to Bill Atkinson's dithering algorithm for turning a photo into a one bit, like black and white.
Oh, I love this app.
And so I will never be able to. John Ballesteri at tinrocket.com wrote an app called HyperDither that uses the actual identical algorithm that Bill Atkinson used. He got the actual algorithm from Bill and will convert any photo that you have into one bit dithered as though it's a HyperCard graphic. And some people might be saying, well, who cares? I've got like graphics converters that can dither into one bit. There's something about the way the Atkinson algorithm processes it that makes it so interesting. It boosts up the contrast a little bit. It gets the details a little bit crisper. There's not as much random noise that appears there as before. But I will also say that in addition to the aesthetic appeal of it, you're just put right back into the mid-80s.
It's really
fun. When you scanned in something with ThunderScan and you're seeing a picture of your dog that on your computer, which you've never seen before, with that really cool dithering pattern and the stupid nostalgia is valuable to some people. Unfortunately, I'm one of those people. And it's a free app, too. It's called
I think I'm going to redo my entire blog and do everything in HyperDither one bit. Yes. Thank you, Andy Inako. He's at the Chicago Sun-Times. If you are in Colorado, immediately go to his lecture. We thank you for being here. CWOB.com
if you go
is
the
website.
If you go to colorado.edu/CWA, you'll get the full schedule of all the events. Everything's open to the public, and there's a lot of cool things going on.
They don't stream the talks, do they?
Okay. I don't believe they do.
Oh, too bad. Next year, we got to be there. Next year.
Next year, I can get you an invite. You'd be a high-class ticket, I think.
I'd love to go. Excellent. All right. Hey, thank you, Andy.
Cheers.
Take care. Clayton, you want to do a pick?
Sure. Yeah, I actually, I've been playing with this. Let's see if I have it up here. Yeah, I do. So it's a little bit of an ecosystem. I know you're a health nut.
Mm-hmm.
And
you can see how well it's worked for me.
Well, for me too. I mean, I had all these different apps for a while. I had different technology that helps you, lose weight and everything. So, but when it all works together, and it works in one little ecosystem, and if you're an iPhone user, you're going to love this. So, I've been using the brand new Fitbit Ultra, which is the new one that came out about a month ago or so, and I just did a review on it. And what's great about it is that you can download the Fitbit app on your iPhone or your iPad. Here it is. Here's this little thing.
It's like it's a pedometer that goes on your belt or around your neck, but also measures now altitude as well as steps.
Right. So the new one, yes, you go up, down steps. And what's great is you get little email updates that say, hey, you've climbed the amount of stairs equivalent to a helicopter in the sky, which is cool. But beyond just that, yeah, you've got the pedometer. And I think of all the different health apps or the different health pieces of equipment out there, like the Fuel and the Moto Active and those different things, I think this is the best. And I think if you look over at like GDGT.com now or Gadget.com, I think it ranks as the one of the highest there too. So in my experience, it's just been durable and works really well. But here's where I get excited about it and what's been working for me. And over the past 2.5 weeks, I've lost 8 pounds now.
Wow.
Is tying it together with the great app Lose It.
Yeah, love
Lose
It.
Which is a long time iOS app. Mm-hmm. But now they've got Fitbit integration inside of it. So
that's neat.
When you walk near your Fitbit base station, it syncs, of course. So you don't need to actually put it on there. And by the way, I actually took it to Florida with me, and for 5-6 days, I didn't need to recharge it. And it still cataloged all that information. And when I came back, I synced it, and it integrates with Lose It. So let's say you've tabulated up your number of calories for the day. I don't know if you're able to see this or not. It's a little
interesting.
You're able to put all your different calories up there for the day. And then at the bottom, you know, it'll say Fitbit integration, and it'll give you like your exercise variant, and it'll subtract the number of calories because you've been wearing your Fitbit throughout the day.
I've been waiting for this kind of integration because we all have all of these. I've got a, you know, the Y Things scale and the Y Things blood pressure monitor and a Fitbit and an up. And it'd be great if these all work together to somehow get a profile.
Right. Well, that brings me to my third portion of this, which is the Withings scale is also integrated with Lose It. So,
oh, I have to get Lose It now. That's great.
Yeah. So every morning when I wake up, you do it at the same time, jump on your Withings scale, works over Wi-Fi, and it syncs with Lose It. So you can see where you are, how much weight you've been losing. And when you see those sorts of little indicators, you actually really start to try to lose weight. You know that you're trying to hit this calorie count every day. So you put in what you've eaten for breakfast, then you're wearing your Fitbit. You try to get to your 10,000 steps every day or whatever your goal is. And you know, and just like I said, 7-8 pounds in the past 2.5 weeks. And, you know, I'm like another 10 pounds off my goal.
That's awesome. Good for
all
you.
Thanks to technology.
Yeah. It's nice to have that reinforcement. That's awesome. So Lose It is free, which is nice. It's on the App Store, available for the iPhone. And the Fitbit's $99 from Fitbit.com. Right. And the Withings scale is like, I don't know, $160 or something, but it's fun to have also.
Yeah. It's fantastic because it gives you your BMI and what else does it give you? Your BMI and your body
fat.
Your fat and your fat also.
How much
when
fat?
You step on that, you see that. But when I mentioned Lose It on the air one day, I got hundreds of emails from people. What is that app? What is that app? I want to lose weight. I need something like that. And the
it's basically a calorie counter, but now that it integrates those in, that's really makes it even more.
And it has a barcode scanner. Have you tried that feature?
Yeah. Isn't that nice? And it's free.
So check it out.
It's been my favorite calorie counter for years, actually.
Right.
I'm glad to see that they're updating it because I don't know how they make money on it, but that's really cool. Thank you, Clay.
They have a partnership with Doritos.
So. And now at Taco Bell. They do Fitbit Lose It Dorito Taco. Do you want to get OS Ken? As long as you're here, Mac OS Ken, why don't you give us a pick? You must have something you like a lot.
I'm in love with paper.
Paper is awesome.
This has been mentioned on the show before. Only, but
not on this show. On iPad Today, I think we mentioned.
No, Alex did love
it. Alex? Oh, that's right.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Go ahead. Tell us how much you love paper. It's okay.
I love paper. That much.
This is not paper like in Scranton, Pennsylvania, The Office, Dunder Mifflin paper.
Not Dunder Mifflin. Not paper for a paperless world. This is, in fact, paper for a paperless world.
It's awesome.
I have a thing that I drew that you can't see.
Let's see. Show us. Look at that.
Yeah.
That's good.
What I like about it, though, and then Eileen was just going, I guess it was Eileen going through the description of the application. It's very simple.
Yeah,
I have ArtRage for my iPad.
Mm-hmm.
And ArtRage lets you do a whole lot. And honestly, for me, because all I've ever done for the most part is doodle.
Right.
ArtRage is a little bit too much. It gets very easy for me to sort of screw up the stuff that I'm doing in ArtRage because there are so many different levels and different tools. So if you're a total pro, then this might not be the thing for you, except for what you were talking about earlier, where you're saying professional photographers use Instagram. This is kind of like that. The line quality is just so incredible, and it's so responsive. It's kind of like what you guys were talking about earlier too about Path. I mean, the best thing about Path is Path. I mean, it's
UI,
the user interface, it's the simplicity, right? And it's sort of the same thing with paper.
Almost makes you feel like a better artist when you're playing with it, too. I'm not that good.
That's what I need.
Totally. No, it's absolutely true. And that really, I think, does have to do with the line quality. It's a free app. It comes with one drawing tool, the pen. And the line quality and the pen, the second I saw that, I knew I was going to spend the full $8 for all of the other tools.
Right.
It's gotten some bad reviews in iTunes because they charge... In the 99-cent app world, they charge too much for the tools, in some people's opinion. But, I mean, $7.99 gets you all five, I think, of the drawing tools. So there's like a Now there's a pencil and there's a watercolor brush and I can't remember what the rest are. There's sort of like an outliner. It's just really, it's a fun, and like Clayton said, it makes you feel like you're a better artist.
I just bought the $7.99 tool kit so I'd have all the pens. So think of it as an $8 app, really.
Pretty much. Although, yeah. I mean, there is enough function. I mean, if you just want to doodle and you want to doodle for free, like if I were giving some kid my iPad to play with, I'd have no problem downloading that, you know, the pen app and letting them do that for free. Because, I mean, it really does.
That's true.
It's just so much more responsive and just it's neat. It's the first art app that I've been tempted by in quite a while. And
it's even more than an art app, too, isn't it? Do you use it, Ken, at all? Like, I've started using, I was designing these raised beds in my backyard, and I'm like, I want an app that I can lay it out. You know, like almost like an AutoCAD program in a way. You know, I wanted something where I could draw it out and kind of map it out and figure where I wanted to put the garden and this and that. And I was like, oh, there's nothing really good in the App Store. There's nothing like that. And now with these little sketchbooks within paper, sort of enables you to have doodles, or maybe I want to do different home designs or things. So it's not just a random page of paper that you're drawing on. You can keep little sketchbooks of different things you're working on around your house and other things like that, too.
Search for it on your iPad as Paper by 53, spelling out the words, because it's hard to find otherwise. It's such a generic name, but absolutely, I agree with you. You get the free one, and if you like it, then you can pay for some pens. You know, each pen is $1.99 or all. Four of them are $7.99. Thank you so much, macOS Ken, for being here. Ken does a regular podcast every day of the week. Just search for macOS Ken on iTunes or anywhere. Go to macosken.com and you can get his daily news show all about the Mac. Did you, when you did this, so what did the hair go from the top of your head to, I'm confused.
I really need to update my picture. Every couple of months, I talk to my web guy because he's very busy. He works on he's got an app for which, you know, he is full time employed, and good for him. Right. And we get together every couple of months and say, yeah, we really need to get on doing something about my site.
A new picture. That's all. That's all we ask.
That's all. Yeah. That's all, yes. But you can't just do a new picture, though, because then suddenly it's a whole redesign. Seriously, we've tried just doing the new picture in the past. And then he'll say, well, you know, it would be really great. And I'm like, well, if you're going to do that kind of work, and then three beers later, you're like, yeah, we should really probably get to the website at some point.
MacOSKen.com. Thanks for being here, Ken. It's really great to talk to you.
Thanks for having me.
Clayton Morris is at Fox and Friends every morning. You work Saturday morning, too, though. I feel so bad for you when I log into Path, and there you are at 3 a.m. getting up.
I know, when I hit the little awake button on Path, and it's, you know, no one is awake anywhere as I'm going into the office. But, yeah, foxandfriends.com. And I usually, on Twitter, I like Clayton Morris on Twitter. I usually tweet out, you know, different tech stories that I'm covering or different video reviews and things, so those get pushed out that way as well. That live on foxnews.com.
It's awesome. It's really great to have you on always. I don't feel bad for you so much as Natalie, who then, like an hour later, Natalie will say, I have a guy friend named Natalie. I'm sorry, I keep saying Natalie. Natalie will say, I wish I could get back to sleep.
I know. I feel so bad. She's four weeks away from having a baby.
That's exciting. Get back to sleep. That's really exciting.
I'm trying to sneak out real quietly.
Do you know if he's a boy or a girl, or are you saying?
No, we haven't found out. I feel like, you know, we get so few surprises as adults that we opt not to find out. But after this, the factory's closed.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I did. I shut it down.
Shut it down.
Shut it down, baby. At Clayton Morris on Twitter and, of course, Fox and Friends. Thanks, you guys. Thanks to you guys for joining us. Thanks also to Andy Anako's run off to be with his people at the World Affairs Conference. Thanks to you for joining us. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern on twit.tv. We like it if you watch live. I can see your responses in the chat room and so forth. However, you can always follow the show. In fact, it's best if you subscribe on iTunes or some other podcatcher and get it every single week. That way you don't have to worry about missing it, audio and video. Yes, Eileen?
Well, the audience just wants to know whether or not you were going to give your virus pick, your antivirus
pick.
Yeah,
I know. No. We ran out of time. Don't read this.
We just wanted to do this bit. Okay,
I know. I just completely ran out of time. Thank you all. We'll do it next week. That's fine. What else?
NAB is next week.
NAB.
We'll be doing Mac Break from the NAB conference.
At the same time or a different time?
Same time. Okay. You, Alex, Larry Jordan, did I get that right?
Yeah.
And Darren Oricata. I just butchered his name.
Good people.
Good people.
With funny names.
People, and we'll have our, we'll be up there on the stage at NAB next week.
That'll be fun. NAB, the National Association of Broadcasters shows, we're going to be there Monday through Thursday of next week for full wall-to-wall coverage as the official streaming partner. Twitch Photo is coming up next. If you love photography, you'll want to stay tuned for Catherine Hall and her guests. It's always a lot of fun. You really learn, too, about great artists and their work and how they do it. And, of course, you can subscribe to that, too, on iTunes. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. Now get back to work. Break time is over.